Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Fozzie Bear, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. You're not Neil Miller. We have a guest host in this week. We gave Neil the week off because, you know, he's a busy man. They're working on a redesign of Film School Rejects, and, you know, so there's a lot of time being put into that, and he has to, you know, eat.
And frankly, I don't think he wanted to see either of these movies this week.
That also is a very sound theory.
Yeah. So I'll take up the slack. I'm not afraid.
That's right. We'll reintroduce Fozzie because you've been on the show before. And but before we do, let's just kind of get through the housekeeping. First thing is fatguysatthemovies.com. You can catch us there online. You can get us on iTunes. Just search Fat Guys at the Movies, and we show up, our smiling little faces, or my sexy face and Neil's somewhat perturbed face. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can send us a voicemail, 614-388-8735. If you did this week, too bad. Neil's got control of that one. So we'll catch you next week if you sent us a voicemail. And also we have one from Tom from Seattle. Sent us one last week. We forgot to play. But I'm going to also save that for next week because I think Neil actually wanted to weigh in on that one. And we got plenty of stuff to talk about anyways. If you want to catch us on Twitter, you can get me at twitter.com/Kevin Carr and Fozzie.
Twitter.com/Fozzie Bear. Now it's B-A-R-E, so I don't get sued by Disney.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Brilliant. Disney does own the rights to the Muppets now.
Exactly.
Now, the other thing is, if you want to catch us on Facebook, we have facebook.com/Fat Guys at the Movies, which is really more my page, but you can also go to the Fat Guys at the Movies fan page. Just search Fat Guys at the Movies. Become a fan. Tell your friends. Enjoy yourself. All that good stuff. Let's say welcome to Fozzie Bear coming back. You were a guest host. I think it was Neil at Sundance.
Yes, he was. Yeah, and okay. It was. I do remember it was the week that Legion came out, so I got to see Legion. That was fun.
Yes, that was not your favorite movie of the year so far.
Absolutely not. It was fun. It was fun in one of those like absolutely horrible ways. Afterward, we kind of came out and we were all stunned. Like, wait, was that a movie? You saw that too, right?
But it had Dennis Quaid in it.
Yeah, hamming it up the entire time.
Chewing through every piece of scenery.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself for anybody who hasn't heard from you. Because you're the host of the podcast, which exactly. Is another podcast show that is about podcasts.
Yeah, it's very meta. What I do is I have hosts from different podcasts on, and I interview them, I quiz them, we have discussion topics. You've been on a couple times in the past, and so we're up to like our 15th, 16th episode now. We're about ready to post our podcast All-Star Summer Movie Preview Spectacular, or as I call it.
And what's the acronym for that?
The PASMAPAPAPAS.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we're posting that this week, and it's just all about the summer movies that are coming out, two of which we are going to talk about this week. And I also blog occasionally. I've fallen off a lot because the expediency of Twitter has made me not want to blog anymore. I'm like, why write a really long blog when I can just tell people in 140 characters?
But, wow, I mean, what sort of world have we come to when you're like, oh man, blogging just takes so much work and time, and it just takes so long for people to read it. Let's go to Twitter.
Exactly. Well, nobody's reading it anyway, but if you want to, you can check out my personal blog at FozzieBear.com. That's FozzieBare once again .com. And that's pretty much all there is to know about me. And I'm a Gemini.
Oh, well, good to know. Good to know. So, you know, send him Twitter, you know, if you want to say hi. If your other Gemini is trying to, you know, meet star-crossed lovers,
yeah.
send him a exactly. Send him a tweet. But I'm going to be on your Papasmus show, and I remember because we recorded it before some of these movies came out, and I think didn't I make the stellar claim that MacGruber was going to be one of the big hits of the summer?
Yeah, exactly. You're a genius, Kevin Carr.
Yes. For those people who think I'm never wrong in my box office predictions, just wait till you listen to this show.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that's going to come alive on DVD. We know that it's going to do really well. So you were just like prescient in the future.
That's right.
Yeah. Overall, it's going to be a huge hit. Not right now.
Yeah, not right now, or next week, or anything, anytime soon.
No, maybe Christmas. Not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon, Christmas. And for the rest of our lives.
But let's talk. Speaking of summer movies, this is what used to actually be the kickoff of summer movie season. Back when I was a kid, and you were a kid. You're a little younger than me, but not as ridiculously young as like Meryl Barr, co-host of The Idiot Boxers. But you and I, when we were kids, it was. Memorial Day was the weekend that they opened the big movies, right? That's when Star Wars opened and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, when the pools opened, the summer movies opened.
Exactly. But now it's like starting the beginning of May. I mean, kids are still got like a month of school left when they do the summer movie seasons because they get so crowded. But I always still think traditionally as Memorial Day is being the opening of summer movie season. So this week we've got two big ones, and they are pretty big movies. I mean, these are large releases. There are Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, and Sex and the City 2. Let's start off with Prince of Persia. Jake Gyllenhaal takes on Middle Eastern bad guys with a dagger that helps him time travel and do a lot of backflips.
This is no ordinary dagger.
Releasing the sand turns back time. Only the holder of the dagger is aware of what's happened.
Did you see that?
Prince Dastan, are you not curious why an orphan from the streets would be chosen to become a prince? There are those who would use the power of the dagger to destroy the world. You must protect it.
You got a chance to see this.
I'm fresh really from seeing it.
Yeah, I want to get your opinion because you're a gamer, right?
I am, and I love the game. I used to love the Prince of Persia games. And one thing I was hoping that they would capture in this movie, the essence of the game, the feeling of the game, and I can say they absolutely did. There were scenes taken directly from the video game. I felt
really?
Like, yeah, I can picture them perfectly in the video game, and it looked exactly like it did in the movie. And it's kind of magical. The Prince of Persia game, when you play it, it's one of the best games that's ever been created. And I know there's a lot of people that'll dispute that, but the way the characters move, the storylines, the imagery, absolutely beautiful. You got the sense of height and of danger when you're playing the game, and they capture that. So I like that in this movie. That was a really good aspect that they were able to capture.
Do they, now, your opinion of video game movies in general, I know that a lot of them just suck.
Right.
Is this one, because I've always heard that at least the first Resident Evil was probably, Resident Evil and Mortal Kombat kind of captured the game the best is what I've always heard, because I don't game. Would you agree with that, and do you think that Prince of Persia kind of meets that level, just people who are fans of the game?
Well, I would actually say that Silent Hill is the movie that best captures a video game, in my opinion. There were so many small aspects, and I think that the people who made that movie, they played the game, and they were true lovers of the game, and I think that's the key. You have to get a filmmaker who loves the original product that they're pulling from and understands the essence of it, and that's what they did with Silent Hill. There were little aspects in that movie, like using the bus maps to try to find your way through the city. Now, that's something you would do in the game. You would pull up your map and you try to navigate.
For Silent Hill, yeah.
You would pull up your map and you try to navigate around to find out where you're going to go, and they actually incorporated that into the movie. And I like that aspect. It was very small, but it worked. It worked for me.
Does the character in Prince of Persia, because you're talking the actual, there was an actual Sands of Time video game.
Yeah, there was.
Correct.
That was the first one I played.
Does he do a lot of backflips?
Is
that part of his signature move?
Oh, it's the whole game is like parkour. He does. He'll run up a wall and flip over backwards. He will jump from wall to wall if there's like a narrow alleyway. He'll jump from wall to wall to get up to the top. You know, when I played the game, it's one of those games. You know how when you play like Grand Theft Auto and you kind of get in that mindset, you're like, you see somebody in a car, you're like, you know, I could drag her out of there and I could just punch her in the face and I could steal that car. You know, there's that little part of you that's still in like the game mindset. And when I would play Prince of Persia, it'd be the same way. I'm like, you know, I could jump on that lamppost and I could just swing over to that light over there and I could get up on that flag. You know, it was hard to come out of the game.
So it's a YouTube video in the making, basically, when you play these games.
Yeah. See my fat butt doing parkour.
Well, on that note, we're actually going to have to take a break, and we come back in the next segment. We're going to finish talking about Prince of Persia and get into Sex and the City 2.
Wonderful. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. This is Fozzie Bear.
Yes. When we were talking about Prince of Persia and your thoughts as a gamer, so you think it actually lived up to the game?
It did. It really captured the game well. I like that aspect of it. There are a couple things it didn't quite hit. It missed a couple aspects. As far as the gaming, that was good. A couple of the other aspects, I was left wanting more.
Well, what do you think about it as a movie? Real quick. I mean, as a summer blockbuster.
As a summer blockbuster, it's exactly what you'd expect from a summer blockbuster. It had a lot of action. It had romance. It had, you know, beautiful imagery. It had great action scenes and great fight scenes. Unfortunately, the chemistry between the two leads was lacking. And You know, another thing, I really think, now this is going to, I'm going to sound like such a jerk, but I think they overestimated the beauty of the co-star Gemma Arterton.
Gemma Arterton. See, I think she's so just awesomely hot, but they didn't do anything. This is the thing, as gorgeous as she is, she's wrapped up in robes the entire time. I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal's wearing less clothes than she does.
Well, that's one thing, but also, you know, there's the a reveal towards the end of the movie. We've seen her for 2 hours, and at one point she's wearing a veil, and then, like, you know, she slowly takes it off to reveal her face. I'm like, yeah. Are we supposed to be wowed? We've seen you for 2 hours. It's the same face I was just looking at.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't think they utilized her as well. Part of it is she was just in Clash of the Titans in a very similar kind of character. Mm-hmm. Although she played a deity of some sort, a demigod or something in Clash.
Yeah, nobody knows what's going on there.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I enjoyed seeing her in this movie. The thing is, I liked it. I thought it was fun. I thought it was okay. It was very much, you know, middle of the road. If you want to go see a summer action movie, this is the one you're going to want to see. I mean, it was fun. I enjoyed it. It didn't overstay its welcome too long. It ran 10-15 minutes a little mm-hmm. longer than it should have, but it wasn't like Transformers 2 where you're like, oh, or Speed Racer where you're like, when's this thing going to end?
Right.
So I mean, I enjoyed it. It the plot gets a little silly at times, and I'm just like, okay, get on with it. But overall, I mean, for the summer movie, I'm going to give it a kind of rocks.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a kind of rocks too, and especially giving it a kind of rocks because of the war in the Middle East allegory. I don't know if you caught that subtle metaphor that they were doing.
Wait, which one? The one with his name? Alfred Molina's character?
Well, no, yeah, him.
I thought he was hilarious because it's such an allegory to
Tea Party protesters.
Yeah.
And then there was the, you know, of course, the weapons of mass destruction that they're looking for, and they can't find them. Where are they? Yeah. So it was very subtle, but it was fun. It was definitely fun. I'm going to give it a kind of rocks.
Okay, cool. Well, let's move on to the next one, which is Sex in the City 2, the sequel. Well, somebody's excited. The sequel to the big hit Sex in the City, in which Carrie and the girls head to Abu Dhabi for a vacation from their crazy lives.
I think we need some glamour.
1 week in Abu Dhabi, all expenses paid for all four of us. Get out of town.
My point exactly.
I can hear the decadence calling.
Ooh. I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. I'm here with my
girls tonight, no strings to pay. I'm having a hot flash.
You're on a camel in the middle of the Arabian desert. If you're not having a hot flash, you're dead.
I'm going to take first crack at this one.
Okay.
And I sort of have the confession to make, and I said this 2 years ago when the first Sex and the City came out. I actually watched the show. I wasn't a huge fan of the show, but it was this bizarre thing that if it was on HBO and I flipped to it, I could not turn the thing off. I had to watch it. Sometimes partly for the shock and awe factor of, oh my God, what are they doing this week? But also just for some reason, it captivated me. And so I did watch the show and I grew to enjoy the characters and get irritated at some of the sort of caricatures that they became. And when the first movie came out, as much as there were people out there hating on that movie, I thought it was a really good cap to the series. I thought it told a full story. It was not just an episode. Mm-hmm. It gave some closure to the characters and their lives, and I thought it was a well-made movie, and it didn't even though it ran 2 hours and 20 minutes, it didn't feel overly long to me. This one, first of all, I thought it ran too long. It runs actually 5 minutes longer than the first one. And my biggest complaint about this one was it was just another episode. It wasn't, there was nothing, I can't even tell you what it's about. You know, they go to Abu Dhabi.
They
ta-da.
Well,
so what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I want to commend you on your review of this series and the movie, because it seems like there's so many people who come at this film with such hate and vitriol that it's offensive in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm.
People hating on the Twilight movies just because that's what they are.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I keep thinking about this movie that's coming out this summer called The Expendables, the one that we were talking about recently on mm-hmm. my podcast, The Podcast. Podcast.com. So we were talking about it there, and everybody seems psyched and super excited about this movie. And it features all these like 80s action stars like Dolph Lundgren and Sylvester Stallone and Bruce Willis, and mm-hmm. it's all these old men who are coming back for an action movie, and people are thrilled about it. However, yeah, people can't seem to wrap their mind around the fact that women over 40 can be attractive and can have a sex life and can be sexually active. And one of the things that people always say about these movies is, God, these women are getting so old and they look hideous. Well, friggin' Dolph Lundgren looks like Brigitte Nielsen by this point. And Sylvester Stallone.
I cannot argue with that point. Yeah. That is an irrefutable point you just made.
I think they might be the same person by now. And Sylvester Stallone looks like an overcooked brisket. He's in his, what, 50s, 60s now?
And he's very lumpy. He kind of looks like a senator.
Yeah, exactly. But people are thrilled to see him jumping out of a plane. So, sure, that's much more believable than Sarah Jessica Parker still looking good and having a great body and having sex. Or Kim Cattrall, who is 52 now, having
sex. Is she really 50? She says it in the movie, but I didn't know if she was actually 52.
I'm going to believe it. I'm going to choose to believe that. So,
but they do have the menopause storyline, which, I mean, at least they're paying... Not because she's 10 years older than all the other girls.
Right. Well, that's,
and she was in the show, but yeah.
That's one thing I really liked about this movie as well, that they took the criticisms that people have about the movie and they addressed them and they told them to go F themselves, basically.
Okay.
So they, you know, that people are upset that these women are so so wealthy and that it's so over the top with the glitz and the glamour. They took that
and the hats. Did you see the hat she's wearing on the plane? She looks like she got hit by a meteor.
Exactly. And they took that and they did everything times 10. They're like, oh, you thought it was bad before? Look at it now, because it is a fantasy. It's not real life. And just like Sylvester Stallone jumping out of a plane at 60 is a fantasy, these women's life is a fantasy as well. And it really worked for me. I really, really enjoyed this movie. Now, you said that it was just an episode. I personally don't
it
have...
It felt like that.
I personally don't have a problem with that. I like it being episodic. I liked the first one showing a year in the life of these characters. Now, this one, I like that it took place over a couple weeks. And I'm fine. And again, I might not be the most critical person because I'm happy just seeing these characters that I love. So, just hanging out...
Well, and that's who I think it's for. And that's the thing where... Me saying it's episodic wasn't necessarily a criticism, but more because this one's made much more for the fans, the diehard fans of the show. I mean, the people who, when it was on HBO, the people who got together and drank Cosmos and watched the shows all together, that's who this one's made for. And it's very, it is very telling because there's a lot of the coffee house discussions. There's about 7 or 8 times where the girls just get together and chit chat and they make cheap jokes and stuff like that, which is what they did on the show.
And that's when it's at its best, too, when these characters are just, you know, they're using their puns, they're doing their puns, and there's some exposition in the storyline there, and it does move forward when they have these conversations. So it's not all action, and it actually does move things ahead, and I really liked that. I just like seeing them interact. And another great thing about this movie is there were some really interesting pairings and interactions between characters of things that should have been addressed a while ago. You didn't really realize that it was lacking, but... Now in this movie, they address these things. You're like, oh yeah, I guess that should have been talked about. And they do in this new movie. And I like that they don't leave anything on the ground. If this is the last movie, as they're saying it's probably going to be, then I think this is a great coda to the entire series.
Well, I think, I think we'll get more of this in the box office segment. Part of it is, I don't think this is going to do the massive business that the first one did, because I think there was still a fervor for the story, as opposed to just the girls getting together and chit-chatting, which for the fans, there is no difference. But I think that you could go see... In fact, I think you could go see Sex in the City, the first one, completely cold, not know anything about the series, or just maybe watch an episode or two on TBS or something like that, which is like they're 12 minutes long on TBS because they have to take out all the bad stuff. But I think you could have gone seen the first movie, not knowing anything about it, and still got a good story. Whereas if you go to this one, you'd be like, what? That just made no sense. Right. It makes no sense if you don't know the characters, which is okay for the fans, and it'll still do well, but I don't see it as launching a franchise.
Right. Well, no, I don't either. I think this might be the last movie, which I'm okay with. If they do anything, they should do Sex and the City, the animated version. I want the characters back. I want an animated show from now on out.
Put it on Adult Swim.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they need to do. I want more and more. You know, and another thing about this film is that...
Real quick, let's get a grade off of this one because we've got about 20 seconds left. Let's get your grade off of this. I'll give you my grade and we'll talk a little bit more in the middle.
Well, of course it's going to be a Totally Rocks. I'm predictable.
Totally Rocks. I'm actually going to say kind of sucks. Not as a hater of the show, but because I thought it was a big letdown from the first movie that I actually gave it as a rocks, to a lot of people's surprise. So this one is kind of sucks, but you know, if you're a fan, go see it.
You lousy son of a... All right. I'll accept that. Begrudgingly.
Cool.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We are in the middle segment. Sorry to have cut you off there, Fozzie, but I wanted to get in and out and get our rating for it. But I think we should still, there's still more to say about this movie, actually. I think so. And I kind of interrupted you. So did you want to finish your thought?
Well, maybe there shouldn't be more to say about this movie. It is a very simple movie. I actually saw it as I saw a lot more than maybe was even there. I saw the fact that they were addressing in this movie when they went to the Middle East. They were addressing the burqas and the the veils that women have to wear there, and the subjugation of women in the Middle East. And I think that was a direct attack at the people who attack this film, and attacked the series as well, because quite honestly, most of the people who don't like it are men who are maybe intimidated by it, generally don't like strong, powerful women. Now, I know that's a big blanket statement, but they do say one line in the movie where I believe it's Miranda says, you know, men pretend to like strong women who speak their mind, but they would actually rather just see us wearing a burqa most of the time. And I truly do believe that.
Did you like the fact that Ron White played her boss?
I hate him. I hate that guy.
But did you like that? I mean, I saw that. I'm like, they couldn't have gotten a better guy to sort of play that stereotypical asshole boss.
Unless they got like Larry the Cable Guy, that might have been close. But
what is with his ball cap and his business suit?
Yeah, his flannel cut
with the,
off
with the sleeves cut off.
Yeah. But, you know, I always consider my – people have always said that I'm a feminist. You know, they've called me a feminist, and I always rejected that word because I'm like, I think feminism is just wanting everybody to be equal. So I think that everybody is a feminist. But when I see people attacking this film without seeing it, I know there are people even over on Reject Radio, which I do like, but there have been guests there who just the mere mention of this movie, it makes them angry. And they've never seen it. They don't want to watch it. They want nothing to do with it. And you hear that quite a bit. So maybe I am a feminist and maybe not everybody is. I know I sound like I'm up on a soapbox, but it really offends me that people are just offended that this movie exists. It's a great movie. It is a fantasy. Nothing about it is true. Nobody in New York lives like this.
Well, that's the thing. I think that's really the point, is that the people who hate this movie, and I hate it when people say this about me. So I'm going to, I've with great thought and consideration, I'm saying this statement. The people who just flat out dismiss and hate this movie, I really think they don't get what the point of the show is.
Yeah.
And the show is not the way people really are. And it never was. Because if you were like this, you'd be flat broke. You'd have every venereal disease in the city. And you would have no friends, and you would be hated by men and women. What this movie, Sex in the City for women, at least I think what it represents for women, is what James Bond represents for men. It's a fantasy that you can live vicariously through, that if you really were in those situations would be horrifying. Everyone's like, oh, cool, James Bond, he licensed to kill, he's got all these women. No guy, I mean, you got people shooting at you, and you're jumping out of airplanes, and you're looking really, and it wouldn't be awesome if you were that cool and bulletproof. And you'd always escape death so easily, and you could just have sex with any woman you wanted to. Most guys would fall flat on their face trying to introduce themselves to women that are half as attractive as the women in a James Bond movie.
True.
So it's a male fantasy, not in a pornographic sense, but it's what men want to live vicariously through. And Sex in the City was the female fantasy, but it's broken up into four different people. You had I said this to somebody. Carrie's character is basically the character in Confessions of a Shopaholic, if the overall message was you shouldn't shop so much,
right,
and she was independently wealthy. Because she's all about material things, and she almost to an annoying level in this movie, because she's like, I want a jewelry. I want this. You know, I mean, she's really sort of, she's real bitchy in the movie, especially at the beginning. And then, of course, you have the slut, which is Samantha, But no one lives like that. Nobody lives like any of them. And it's like their outfits. No one walks around in those outfits. That's not the way typical New Yorkers look.
No, nobody's going to wear that hat onto a plane.
Yeah, which is part of the joke. So, yeah, I think people just don't quite always quite understand that it's not that women want, although there are women that do want to be the girls, but that's not what it represents. It represents the sort of live vicariously fantasy. Wouldn't it be neat if you could do this, only it's just a little more grounded in reality than a James Bond film? For the opposite
side. And it's funny, I have 007 written as a note in my notes as well, because people seem to accept 007 and see him as an idol, but he is just as materialistic. Look at his fancy car and his Rolex. Oh, yeah. and his tuxedo, and he's always dressed.
Well, there was the movie Casino Royale. He goes to and he's like, no, we need, and he literally makes a point. He's like, no, we need to stay in the best room, and we need to get the best food, and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, are you kidding me? Real spies eat grubs.
Yeah, exactly. And that comes back to feminism. You know, the idea of feminism, 007, you need to apply the same rules you would to this 007 character that you would to the girls in the Sex and the City in your mind. So yeah. The guys who are offended by this movie, try to think of it that way and don't be scared.
So, I mean, it's fun. I feel it's a letdown, but this is made more for the fans who miss the show than the people who kind of want to get into the experience. Cause what's funny is the screening I was at was not packed. Now, you went and saw it in Manhattan,
right?
So it has to be packed. I mean, by contract, I think they have to pack those shows in Manhattan. But part of the thing is, this show, they actually give the timeline. The show is 12 years old. And so the people who watched the show were like in their 20s and early 30s. Mm-hmm. That was who watched the show. And now that core fan base, now there's the high school kids who then picked it up on TBS or whatever and reruns. But the core fan base is in the 30s and 40s, which is why it's moved more into people getting married and having kids and that sort of thing. But yeah, I didn't like the little coffee table discussions as much, just because, you know, it didn't do anything to the movie. I do have to say this, and I brought this up to you in the show prep. On the podcast, which is going live this week, you made the pretty ballsy determination that the gayest movie of the summer
yes,
is going to be Cats and Dogs 2, Revenge of Kitty Galore. And you actually made you lay down a good point. Why? Because it has like Bette Midler and James Marsden.
And Sean Hayes. And I mean, and it references, you know, Pussy Galore, who's, yeah. We love her. She's fabulous.
Yeah. And I still think I have not yet seen that movie. So I can't say that overall it's not, but it's going to have to really work hard to beat the first 15 minutes of Sex and the City 2.
You mean to beat Liza Minnelli singing Single Ladies?
Well, I felt like I went to another planet when that happened.
I did too. I actually left my body. I was there with my boyfriend and I grabbed his hand and I was squeezing it because it was the happiest moment of my life at that exact moment.
It was fascinating. And you know, and the thing is, it wasn't, they did the whole freaking song too. That's what's so amazing, is it's not just this little, oh, because usually when they have like a cameo do a song, they do like the first line or two. No, they do the whole music video practically.
Yeah.
And I this is another thing I said to you, I felt like they did like a digital face replacement on her.
Yeah.
To a younger, and I don't know, it may have been really her body, but I mean, I felt like I was watching Count Dooku with the lightsaber, because I mean, she looked great. It was not the Liza Minnelli you've been seeing in tabloids and on what was she on, Arrested Development?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. It really, to me, even more than the Beyonce video, it really had a flashback to her mom doing, what is it, Get Happy, the old version of Get Happy.
Well,
with the hats and stuff. Yeah,
Liza Minnelli is a great comedic actress. She was wonderful in Arrested Development, and she's wonderful here. She knows herself. She knows where she stands, and like, yeah, that she's kind of a joke, and that she's a gay icon, and what she does. So she works it in this movie.
That was a great, I'm not going to give away the line, but it's a great gay icon joke about her.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. So it was everything I could want. I just hope that more people will look at this movie respectfully. And it's not going to hurt people, even though Liza Minnelli is singing Single Ladies. It doesn't hurt you, straight guys. It's fine. Calm down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, I mean, it's like, I have to say, I liked that opening segment just for how outrageous it was.
Yeah, it was so over the top. And I think that was the punch in the face to the critics of the show. They're like, all right, you think we were over the top before? Watch this.
So yeah, so as much as even though I wasn't, I didn't love the movie. I didn't really like the movie. I can respect aspects of the movie, but I do. But no, hey, for the fans are going to love this movie.
Yeah, and I did.
That leads us into the segment about box office. You weren't here last week, but I had Neil and I were right on the money with Shrek. We were thinking, you know, 70 million ish, and that's what it made, which is a low end. It actually went down from the last couple of movies. A lot of people are saying, oh, 3D's over because of it. I just think Shrek's over.
Yeah.
Because of that. I don't think it has anything to do with 3D.
Well, and trilogies is the big thing now, and they come out with a fourth one. We're like, oh, what do we do with this? I haven't seen a fourth movie.
They called it the final chapter, and every single poster says final chapter, and finally the movie's called Forever After. And it's like, you really change it? Because I mean, there have been a lot of movies that have been the final chapter that aren't the final chapter. I mean, Friday the 13th Part 4 was the final chapter, and they did six more before they went and rebooted it. And they did the same thing with The Final Nightmare, and they did more Freddy Krueger movies. And so they've done the final whatever, and that's usually the fourth one. But they're supposed to have a Puss in Boots movie next summer, which I think will be funnier because I'm just tired of Shrek as a character.
Well,
not
you know,
the universe. I'm just tired of Shrek.
Well, you know, I watched So I Married an Axe Murderer recently on Netflix Instant, and it really made me sad that that was the Mike Myers of that day, and he was brilliant, and it's such a good movie, and it's just he's been relegated to this. I wish he could have a comeback in something live action and actually really good.
Well, he had a shot with Inglourious Basterds. I mean, he played the British agent, which was his Studio 54 performance.
Well, yeah, well, no, I want a Mike Myers movie. I want So I Married an Axe Murderer or Austin Powers or something that's featuring
him. Well, he
did
try this little thing called The Love Guru 2 years ago.
Yeah, doesn't Neil love that movie?
Neil liked it. He said it wasn't – he gave it a positive review, and I've been – using that as a weapon against him.
Yeah, good. You should.
Ever since, yes.
He has that coming.
But MacGruber bombed, sadly. Yeah. I think that was more of a meta joke in the sense that whatever MacGruber gets involved in blows up at the end.
So they planned that. Well done,
Yeah, they
Lauren
planned
Michaels.
That it wouldn't do well. It's a funny movie. It's a spoof of 80s act. It's those HBO action movies. So, I mean, it didn't do well, but... What do you think is going to win? Who do you think is going to win? Do you think Prince of Persia or Sex and the City is going to win this weekend?
You know, this is the exact definition of counter-programming. So it's hard to say. I think they're really going to split it. If either one has to come out on top, and it's going to be a squeaker, but I think Sex and the City, just based on the screenings that I went to today, my who was going to go with me to the screening of Prince of Persia backed out, and I had to find somebody. I went through 10 people. I could not give this ticket away.
Yeah.
So I think people are feeling a little sand malaise right now. We've had a lot of that recently, and over the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of sand effects, and I think people are just done with it. Even though I liked it and it was enjoyable, it kind of rocked. I don't think people are going to flock to the theater.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of get that feeling for both of them. I think what you're going to see with Sex and the City is it'll totally win. Well, it's going to win Thursday because. Prince of Persia doesn't come out till Friday.
Right.
It has a shot at winning Friday, but I think its biggest business is going to be Thursdays, the Wednesday night, Thursday night. Because women can go, they can come into work late. You know, they don't have to, it's not worried about kids. You know, you're not going to get teenagers going to see the midnight show. It's not hedging that bet. And Prince of Persia, I think, covers a wider demographic. So I think if I were to put money, I'm going to actually say Prince of Persia will probably win this weekend. How much is it going to make? I don't know, 60? I think 60. Right, both of them are right in the 50s, 60s. I don't think either of them are going to be a juggernaut, even with the long weekend.
Right. I don't either.
But you throw in the long weekend, I think Prince of Persia has a little bit of the edge because it's more of a family film. And people I've talked to, my kids loved it. And other kids in the theater that I talked to, teenagers and such, they loved it. Because that's what I do. I go to theaters and just chat up teenagers and get kicked out. I think it's just going to be a numbers game more than anything else. I just think that Prince of Persia maybe has an outside appeal a little more. And what was odd is, like I said, the Sex and the City screening wasn't filled, and I don't know why. And maybe everyone was waiting to go see it with their friends at midnight, so they wanted to kind of go out and have drinks and dress in the little black dress. I wore a little black dress and these little strappy sandals.
Oh, that's adorable. Yeah. Pictures or it didn't happen, Kevin.
damn it. Anywho. So yeah, we'll see. We'll have to, Well, you know, one of our fans has been asking for a Fat Guy bet, and maybe I'll have to ask you. Would you be willing to do a Fat Guy push-up bet with me?
Oh, absolutely.
If Sex and the City wins the weekend over Prince of Persia, I'll do, what, 10 push-ups? We'll do a little live recorded segment, you and me, and then we can play it next week. And if Prince of Persia wins, you got to do 10 push-ups.
This is going to be obscene. It's just going to be one of us grunting for 10 minutes.
Yeah, we can just be sitting on the couch going, oh man, that's two.
These push-ups hurt so much. I'm doing so many push-ups.
Yes.
But I'll take
so,
the
since
bet
Neil's
gladly.
Been too much of a wimp to actually engage me with a Fat Guy bet, I'm gonna angle you to do that.
Well, I came on to see these movies when Neil was afraid. I ain't afraid of nothing.
There you go.
Bring
all
it.
Right. It is on the five, the 10. So if Prince of Persia wins, you do the push-ups. Sex and the City 2 wins, I do the push-ups.
You're on.
If MacGruber wins, hide the women and children because the apocalypse is
going.
It'll
rip a hole in time and space.
Exactly. Now, let's move on to the Fat Guy 5 real quick because we're totally over this segment. A lot of people are doing five, you know, they're doing lists about super video game movies and that sort of thing. And I said, screw that. We're going to do something more creative. And that would be five desert movies. Since both Sex and the City and Prince of Persia take place in the desert.
Yes. And that was actually my idea. Thanks for trying to steal it, Kevin.
Well, you know what? That's what a good host does. Co-ops the ideas around him. I'm the George Lucas of podcasting right now.
Oh, you're that comedian. What's his name? Carlos Mencia. You're the Carlos Mencia of the Fat Guys at the Movies.
Oh, don't even. That's so mean.
Oh, I'm sorry. I take that back.
You're never coming on the show again. anyways, so top five desert movies. I'm going to do the first one. This was my pick. And simply because it actually had desert in the title, and it was the first one I thought of when you gave the idea. And I thought Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. But also because it's a funny movie. It's a neat movie. If you haven't seen it... It's Australian, right? Not New Zealand. It's Australian.
It is Australian, yes.
And it's a bunch of it's a drag queen show that's traveling across the desert in a bus to get to. Is it they're trying to get to one of their sons?
Well, that's not the reason that they find out that he has a son when he gets there.
Oops.
But he's actually going just to do a show.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It is a big surprise that he has a son. But yeah, it's a great movie. It was kind of like the Australian version of Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
Which one came out first? Was it Tu Wong Fu that came out?
No, Priscilla
okay,
came out
right.
first. And Priscilla actually, as much as I like Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, it was, God, that's a long title. That's a lot to say. We'll just
it's
say
like the Assassination of Jesse James.
The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain.
Yeah.
So the Tu Wong Fu was one of those movies that I like, but it is like the magical homo movie where the, Spike Lee coined the phrase the magical Negro. This is a magical homo where these three guys, they come into a small town, these three drag queens, they fix everybody's life and they're perfectly content not having any romantic relationship or, moving along in life themselves. Yeah. They're just happy fixing the straight people. So that was
is it that what happens in real life?
Yeah. That's all we do. That's all we care about, taking care
you just
of
swoop people. In capes and fix the world.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, dealt with these relationships a little more. One of them, his partner had just passed away. Mm-hmm. Another one, he's dealing with his ex-wife and relationships in general. It is a little more realistic, not uber realistic because it's still the 90s, but it's a great movie and great desert setting.
Well, and I do think it's also, you're right, I think the characters are a little more complex, and there's a little bit more of a deeper, they reveal more of the character in these, than sort of like these gay superheroes coming to the small town.
And again, straight guys, if you're terrified, it has Mr. Smith from The Matrix in it, if that'll bring it.
Well, and that's what's so great is to go back, like, if you haven't watched, because I never saw it when it first came out, and is it Fox? I think Fox released it. In the U.S., so they released the DVD, and I got sent the DVD to review because I requested it, because I'm like, oh, I've never seen that. Let me request that. And watching it now, because you don't realize, when it was made, the people who were in it weren't known.
Right.
Because you had Mr. Smith, Agent Smith, Hugo Weaving.
Hugo Weaving.
And it has the guy from...
Memento.
Memento, what's his name?
Hugh.
I'm blanking on his name.
Let's just call him Hugh Jackman. They're all
Hugh
the same.
the other Hugh Jackman. And Terrence Stamp. Well, everyone knows who Terrence Stamp is. But
Neil
but
yeah, Assad.
Yeah, you don't... You watch this and you're like, oh my God, that's so... You know, that's the guy from Memento, Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce, there you go.
And you're like, that's Guy Pearce. Oh, wow. And he's playing a drag queen. And oh my gosh, there's Agent Smith and he's a drag queen. And so it's whereas like to Wong Fu, they took these very macho men and put them in drag.
Right.
Whereas in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, they just took these guys who at the time were less known and they're Australian actors. And now they're big names and you're just like, oh my God. So and it's an interesting thing to watch now.
It also has the best use of a Vanessa Williams song ever.
Which one is that?
Sometimes the snow comes down in June. Save the best for last. It's the outro song where the Aborigine, not spoilers, people, but the Aborigine, he dresses in drag and sings it at the end.
Yes,
beautiful.
Yes,
it's a great movie.
Well, let's move on to the next one. This one is also going to be mine. Originally, I was going to call it. I thought it was Sons of the Desert. And I got the name wrong because it's a Laurel and Hardy movie, but Sons of the Desert has actually nothing to do with the desert. it's the Flying Deuces, which is actually based on a short of theirs called, or sort of a remake-ish, called Bow Hunks.
Oh, I have that movie.
Yeah, it was probably very disappointing when you watched it.
Yeah, I got that and I was like, what the hell? I kept fast-forwarding.
Is it black and white? Is this supposed to be artsy? What's going on?
They're not even hot. How dare they call themselves hunks?
Yeah, but it's where Laurel and Hardy joined the Foreign Legion. One of their funniest movies. So check that one out. Again, Flying Deuces is the feature and Bow Hunks is the... It's like a 40-minute short. Mm. So,
I'll put that on my list.
And the next one, you want to do the next one?
Yeah, the next one. I love the next one.
Co-opted a whole bunch of these.
Well, I love the next movie, The Mummy, the remake of The Mummy starring Brendan Fraser. I know not everybody loves Brendan Fraser, but this is where he excels. This is what he does.
Big, dumb, stupid action movies.
Exactly. That's what he does well. And The Mummy was a great movie. And The Mummy 2 was really good as well. I like that one a lot. The third one, we'll forget that.
Not so much.
Yeah. But the first two were great, and great desert settings, great sand effects. They kind of originated the sand effects that we were talking about.
Well, this was back in, I think it came out, what, 99?
99, okay.
98. Actually, it's interesting. It parallels what's going on today with Universal. At the time, Universal was ready to die as a studio because they had done Babe Pig in the City, which cost $90 million. It made nothing.
Oh.
And they did the remake of Psycho, which they put a lot of money into and it made nothing. And they had a whole series. They had like four or five just real huge mega flops. And it was The Mummy that came in and saved the day.
Well, it was their own fault for having two movies back to back starring talking pigs, Vince Vaughn.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Anne Heche. But anyways.
No.
And we had, but right now, Universal's hemorrhaging. Mm-hmm. It can't get a hit to save its life. So.
Oh, sorry, Universal. That's sad. It'll come back. They've been around since what, the 20s. They'll be fine.
Yes,
I'm not worried about them.
They're just like TWA.
Yeah, exactly. why don't you take the next one? Because I dispute this a little.
Well, I'm put it in there because here's me being a science geek. I'm going to say March of the Penguins.
Explain
and that. Well, by scientific definition of climate, Antarctica is a desert because it gets very little precipitation. It's just the precipitation never melts. That's the whole point. The reason it's all snow and ice is because it's years and years and it never melts like in the highest, in the center. And most of the ice on the edge happens if it's the water freezing on the ocean, but inside the continent, it's actually technically a desert. And so it's a desert movie. It's just a different type of desert.
So hosts cheat and they steal. Hmm, interesting.
That's right. I do that. It was either that or I could have said whiteout.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I refuse to put that on this list.
You can do the next one.
The next one is, it's kind of a repeat for me. I was thinking back to my last time on Fat Guys at the Movies, and I think we did diner movies that take place primarily at a diner. Legion. Yeah, it just came out. And I think I put this movie on my list then, but it is one of my all-time favorite movies. And if I ever come back, I'm going to find a way to put this on every single list that we do. It's Tremors, the original Tremors.
What are your thoughts on the sequels? With the graboids and all that stuff.
I've seen the second one, kind of half watched it.
Somebody was really drunk when he watched it.
Yeah, I like to think that they didn't exist. The first one is a near perfect movie for me, and it should just end there.
Okay, yeah. I'll give you that because it has a Because it has Reba McEntire and the guy and the father from Family Ties blowing shit up.
Yeah. So if you're ever playing 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon and Michael J. Fox comes up, this is the movie that'll save you.
Bingo.
Yes. So that's
if you're allowed to go through TV.
Yeah, you can. That's my rule.
Okay. Well, then that's the general rule then.
Yes.
Honorable mentions. Let's give a couple here. You can have that first one.
Well, I wanted to put Beetlejuice on the list. Now you said that shouldn't really count because it's only the sandworms when they go through the door and they shouldn't be there and they're in limbo. But I love those desert scenes and the sandworms were terrifying to me when I was a kid.
Yes, and it was genuine. I retaliated with that and I said, well, something like Dune would be a desert movie. And
I hate Dune.
You threw something at me. It didn't reach me because you're in New York.
Yeah. Dune is horrible and stupid. It's one of those movies. I was forced to watch that recently. My boyfriend wanted me to watch it, and we sat down. And this is my standard. I'm like, you know what? Just because it's boring and stupid doesn't mean it's good. I have to constantly explain that to people. And I think that movie's ridiculous.
Well, it just came out on Blu-ray. I have to watch it. I've actually got a copy of it sitting there.
Well, be prepared for something boring and stupid.
I like Dune. But anyways, Star Wars Episode 4 and Episode 1 also, these are your suggestions, which are good suggestions. And I count them as desert movies because a good chunk of the movie does take place on Tatooine in the desert. Now, admittedly, Episode 1, most of it takes place on Tatooine because you have to sit through a 30-minute pod race.
Right.
But there you go.
Which we've learned was pointless thanks to that hour and a half long review. Yes. I never realized that before, but thank you, sir. My hat's off.
I can't watch those, man. I can't make it through. I can't watch a review that's almost as long as the movie.
Oh, but you can watch Dune. Interesting.
But Dune's an awesome film.
All right. We should stop this now.
All right. We'll go to a break.
Perfect. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. It is time for the world-famous DVD Roundup. Oh,
I think
nice.
Last week I said I was going to do a different sound effect. I don't know.
Well, I know on the Idiot Boxers, Meryl asked you to do a sound effect. You're like, what, now? No, that's a great sound effect. I'm glad that you don't use the whole soundboard thing. You're like Michael Winslow, doing it from the mouth.
Wow.
Which is the name of the porn movie that he's in now.
Wonderful.
You might edit that out. Sorry.
That might get bleeped.
Yeah.
Anyways, now let's move on. Let's move on to the DVD roundup before we get in too much trouble. Anyways, do you want to go first?
Oh, no, please. You're the host. You steal and cheat, please.
Yeah, you want to do yours first so you can demand that they're yours. Yes. The first one is Spartacus on Blu-ray. Hmm. This is the 1960s movie. It's actually his 50th anniversary of Kirk Douglas as the legendary Spartacus in Stanley Kubrick's movie, and it's the restored version. So it has the extra, you know, all the the bath scene and stuff like that that was taken out way back. There's been like 8 versions of this movie. I mean, it's like The Last House on the Left. It's got so many versions of it. Yeah. Not exactly the same things happen in it, though.
Well, to me, this movie will always be Sporadicus from Clueless. That's how I'll always refer to it. Exactly. We're watching Sporadicus.
Sporadicus. But no, it's actually good. It's on Blu-ray. It looks great. The transfer's pretty good. And it's 3 hours and 17 minutes long. But, you know, it's interesting. It's one of the great Gladiator movies. And there's also David Cross, Bigger and Blacker-er. If you don't know who David Cross is, he's a comedian from the Bob and Mr. Show with Bob and David. And a very funny guy, very edgy, and he doesn't care who he offends, and he doesn't care who he offends in this one. And it's a great, hilarious comedy special and has some nice deleted moments as well.
No, that's Tobias Fünke from Arrested Development, right? Is that the one?
That is Tobias Fünke.
Yes,
that's right.
I love him. I love that mustache. Is that all you had on your list?
That's it. I really had it was a low week. I'll let you do the other two.
Well, I don't have many either. I have the Dr. Horrible Sing-Along Blog DVD set. If you haven't seen it yet, it's
the Blu-ray. It's the first time on Blu-ray.
Oh, that's right. It's I don't have a Blu-ray player, so go out and enjoy the high definition for me. Mm-hmm. It's a great musical, and it also was you know, took place during the writer's strike, and it's the movie, or it's the experiment that's going to hopefully do character-driven or product-driven pieces from now on. I don't know if I'm conveying this well, but Joss Whedon created it because he couldn't write anything on television. He's like, you know what? I'm going to write something and I'm going to put it on the internet. And it actually worked. Who knew?
It was cute. Now, we've had this conversation before, and I've had it with many people. I'm not a Joss Whedon fan.
Yeah, I know.
So, and I watched this, and me watching this was like watching Firefly, where I'm like, oh, if you love Joss Whedon, you're going to love this. Like, you're just going to fall down and into a seizure. I thought it was cute. I didn't like, what's the girl's name who's in it? Felicia Day. I didn't. Mm-hmm. But I mean, NPH was great in it, and Nathan Fillion was really funny in it. Not wild about the songs, but I get the joke.
Yeah. And you need to watch it for NPH. He's always great. That's what he's known as now. NPH.
NPH.
Very fancy. And speaking of Joss Whedon, vampires, we're also going to go with True Blood. Season 2 on DVD. Now, I'll say I wasn't the biggest fan of True Blood when it first came on. I caught on pretty quickly. Season 2 is definitely much better than Season 1. A lot happens in Season 2. I love it.
I haven't gotten it because I actually don't have premium cable. Because why buy? Because I got so many DVDs sent to me.
That's true.
I didn't get True Blood. I saw the first season, which I enjoyed, mainly because of the gratuitous nudity with Anna Paquin.
Oh, yeah.
And what's her name?
Who else was new?
It's the girl from, I don't remember her name, but she was in Wolverine. And then there was also, Lindsay Kaplan? I mean, it's just like every actress you want to see naked, if they're in the show, they're naked.
There's a lot of male nudity, too. Everybody's naked. It's hot down in Louisiana.
Nobody needs clothes.
Exactly. And season 3 is premiering on HBO on my birthday. Couldn't think of a better gift.
Oh, how sweet.
And your son's birthday. Right.
That's right.
Just found that out. We share a birthday. Yep.
Yes, he stole it from you.
Yeah.
You can blame him. Blame me for that one. Host steal.
Yep, exactly.
The stinkers of the week. I got mine is Dear John, which is like we need another Nicholas Sparks movie for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Channing Tatum, no one accused him of being a good actor.
No. Well, my stinker of the week, and we differ on this, is Romeo and Juliet coming to... Is it on DVD or Blu-ray? I don't care.
Probably Blu-ray.
Whatever.
You need the high-def transfer of crappy Troma movies.
Exactly. I know so many people are big fans of Troma. I think it's boring and stupid and crap. And so, again...
How you really feel.
I have to tell people, just because it's boring and stupid doesn't mean it's good. That's a tip from your Uncle Fozzie.
Good to know. Well, let's do the review wrap-up. We have Sex and the City 2, which you said...
Totally rocks.
And I said it actually kind of sucks, more as a result of comparing it to the show and the other movie. But fans will love it. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, you said...
Kind of rocks.
Yeah, I said kind of rocks, too. So next week, we will probably have Neil back on. We'll be seeing Get Him to the Greek, Killers with... Catherine Heigl, Marmaduke with the other dog, and Splice with the alien. And that's about it. Until next time, you can check us out on Fat Guys at the Movies. Thanks again to Fozzie Bear, where you can get him on Twitter, twitter.com/FozzieBear with BARE.
Correct.
And you can also hear his podcast at thepodcastpodcast.com.
Exactly. And if you want to look for it in the iTunes store, you can look for The Podcast Podcast, all one word.
Yes. So thank you again. Thanks again for filling in, Fozzie. And,
absolutely. Anytime. I'll come back with another Tremors recommendation next time.
I will find a way to somehow try to block the Tremors recommendation. But we will have you on again soon.
Definitely.
And we'll see you all later. Thanks.
Thanks.